The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors: Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card that generates leads. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet and Fetch Pro, the secure, high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. And Printify, the online, on-demand print shop for all your corporate merchandise. Be sure to visit our online store and get your own podcast merch. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
You don't belong here, you know, in your first year, even your second year a little bit, but at the end of your third year, if you're still feeling this way, then there's something wrong.
Okay, and that's good advice.
Yeah, I guess so, right? But there I was at the end of my third year, like still feeling like, what the F am I doing here? Like, this was such a big mistake, you know, and like, I was kind of panicking. I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And
because it's not like, what do you do if you come? I mean, law school, you could do a lot of things, right? Business school, you come at medical school, you're kind of a medical doctor. I mean, I know some people that made a transition into other things, but it's hard.
Yeah. And, you know, they don't really tell you about any of that stuff. Like, you know, and, you know, I didn't. And for my family, Mitch, like, it wasn't even enough just to be a doctor. You had to be like
a specialist
or a respected, right, you know, doctor.
A leading oncologist in the country. And then you'd be respected.
Yeah, exactly. So it just, you know, became, after a while, I just started sensing a pattern like, oh, you know, this is never going to be enough.
Right.
You
know? It's just going, like, to keep going.
Yeah. And either, you know,
and you're not happy at that point, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So is that any way to live your life, you know, where basically you're unhappy and you resent your parents for the rest of your life?
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit beinhackerlaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
Hey, I'm Suresh Kondabolu. I'm an orthopedic surgeon by training, but I split my time practicing medicine and as director of strategic media and marketing at Bullet Health, which is a medical education technology company for orthopedic surgeons and medical students.
So Suresh, thanks for coming on. I was talking to you before. PodMax is cool. I've been here probably half a dozen times, and Josh and Eric are good guys. I'm always connecting them with people. So we got a long day. So this is the first of three interviews that you're going to be doing and I'm going to be doing. So why don't we jump into it? If you want to tell me about your background, I know you said you're in orthopedics, or you were. I work a lot of orthopedic surgeons, actually, and in my law practice. And I know Ortho Bullet. So I was looking at the website, but you got to explain to me like what you do. But maybe we could start, like, you know, where you grew up, where you're from, how you got into medicine, you know, the whole backstory.
Yeah. So I was born in Brooklyn. I grew up in Queens and Long Island. So not too far from you. I don't know if you grew up in
Jersey. I'm outside in Jersey, outside of Staten Island. Yes, I'm kind of in the neighborhood.
Okay. All right, cool. Yeah. So you know, I think you know, just for some context, I went into medicine for all of the wrong reasons. you know, I think A lot of people that go into medicine for the right reasons will tell you that medicine was a calling or something to that effect. For me, it was more of a telling. My parents told me to do it, you know, so right. Like
it's kind of how I went up into law. It's the same thing, you know.
Is that right?
Be a doctor, right?
Exactly. Yeah. You know, I think a lot of people, especially children of immigrants, could kind of relate to that. And in my house, you were going to be one of the three D's. You were going to be a doctor, a dentist, or a disappointment. So
I love it.
That's yeah,
funny. Yeah, it's true though. Yeah,
it's so true, right?
Right.
And I think I grew up with a lot of guilt because my parents were really the embodiment of the American dream. Both, you know, immigrants from India, had nothing, really rags to riches kind of, you know, story. You know, my dad, entrepreneur, he has to this day a jewelry retail business in Queens, and you know, then branched out into real estate, at you know, a bunch of businesses. I always wanted to be like him.
He didn't want you to be, right?
He didn't want me to be. And I think that's also pretty common, you know. Yeah.
First generation born here, right? Both your parents were born overseas. So
exactly.
Yeah, be a professional, that's the way it is.
100%. You know, my dad didn't go to college, like, you know, very much was kind of like, you know, got his education on the streets of New York when he came here, you know.
Yeah.
Like, and his sister was, and he grew up in a village, like a real village, not like Greenwich Village in New York.
Streets and things like that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I always think like how confused he must have been when he came here. It was like, this is a village. Like, this is going to be easy. Like,
right. We can make it here.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Funny.
So, but, his sister, he was the youngest of 11, and his sister,
big family.
Yeah, huge family. And his sister, one of his older sisters, she was like the one that got out of the village, you know. She got educated. And in those days, and even now, to some extent, I mean, you know, women, like, you know, you got an MRS degree, you know, your whole goal was to get married.
Yeah.
And that whole thing. But, you know, she was very different. She became a nurse and was able to, you know, that was her
there
ticket.
Or here.
She trained over there. She went to school over there, but then, you know, she was able to come over here in the 70s through some kind of an exchange program.
Yeah, that was probably harder in the 70s than it is today.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, she got married to a doctor, and, you know, she brought over my dad and his brother. And she was, you know, very much education driven, like, you know, this is your way out. This is what, you know, the real American dream is, like, you know, getting an education and then you'll be set. And my dad was just like, no, that's not what I heard. Like, you know, so he was just like, it makes no sense for me to be spending all this money to go to school for something that I feel like I already know how to do, which was sell stuff. Like, you know, he knew he was a businessman. He knew he wanted to sell things.
How old was he at this point?
He was probably in his early 20s.
All right. So it's ironic that he feels that way, yet then he has you and his, your mom have you. And then they're like, no, this is what you got to do. You got to go to school. And I'm not putting down education. There's a lot of ways to do it. We're just ingrained to think that you get older, you do well in high school, I went to Cornell, I went to law school, the whole thing, but I would do it differently if I look back. I think we're just pushed that way, brainwashed is probably a better word, to think, but it's ironic that your dad felt that that's not the way to go, but for you, it was the way to go.
Yeah, and you know, I think there's probably a few things that happened there, because obviously he wound up being, you know, very successful, and
yeah,
you know, he makes more money than any doctor that I know. And I remember saying that to him too. I was just like, Dad, like, you know, this, I just want to take over the family business. I want to learn from you. Like, you know, he was a guy, you know, I don't know how many people grew up with something like this, because I think most people hate their jobs. And I grew up in a household where I saw a man get up every morning pumped for his day.
Loved what he did.
Yeah. And I was like, I want what he's having.
Yeah.
You know,
Not only that, it's hard to go into business. You got your dad's business already, right? You can go into his business. You can learn from him, take it over. Seems to make sense to me, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think one of the kind of chips on his shoulder is when he came to this country at that time, a lot of the other people in the Indian community that were here that were able to come over, A, probably had a little bit of money and were able to, you know, come over, weren't really, you know, the poorest of the poor, like kind of where he grew up.
Right.
And the people that were coming over were highly educated, were here kind of like my aunt was, like, you know, they were either like nurses, doctors, engineers.
Yeah.
He was none of those things. And, you know, he was working in flea markets. He was really like, you know, trying to learn, you know, how to build a business, but he didn't have any money. And so he was working all these odd jobs. And so the other people in his community, which, you know, very much at that time and, you know, still now to some extent, very cliquey, like, you know, you only kind of hung out with like the other Indian people.
Right.
And they like wouldn't give him the time of day. They
really
like would, they were, they would look
like a different class almost.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, like a, really? You know, an untouchable kind of, you know, a recalibration of the caste system,
yeah,
in America now. And he's just like, you know, what gives, you know? And, you know, it's not like entrepreneurship is now as this like
right.
cool thing.
Yeah.
You know, back then it was just like entrepreneur meant you're a loser. And
right.
so, and especially like at that time, he didn't even, you know, have his own business. But even when he did, when he was rubbing elbows with, you know, doctors and, you know, engineers and stuff, they wouldn't even shake his hand. They were
really?
Just like, you know, that might be contagious, whatever.
These
that
are members
has.
Of his own community.
Members of his own community spoke the yeah. same language, but, you know, just looked down on him.
Yeah.
And so like when I think he always had that kind of like chip on his shoulder. And then, you know, years later, the rest is history. Now, like those very same people are asking him for business advice and,
right.
you know, like, you know, he lives in the same neighborhoods and but yeah, I mean, where I grew up, we were surrounded by a bunch of doctors and lawyers and
right.
you know, he was really the only
yeah, so he saw that and he's like, well, I don't want my son to go down that route. I want him to be a doctor and be accepted. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, I remember asking him like, you know, dad, like, you know, why can't I just do what you're doing? You make, you know, everyone seems to measure success by financial success and you make more money than any doctor that, you know, I've ever met. So why not just let me, you know, go into business? And he was just like, son, I know people that own candy stores or like, you know, halal food carts that make more money than doctors. But at the end of the day, like, you know, those people aren't respected in the
yeah,
same
so
way.
Respect was important to him.
Respect was his, you know,
measuring
his,
stick. Yeah.
Was his measuring stick. Plus,
yeah.
you know, the validation, like, you know, I think a lot of parents, you know, they're validated by, you know, where their kid goes to school and, you know, what they wind up being, where
yeah,
they
we
wind
vicariously
up
live through.
Vicariously.
Yeah.
So, you know, they were no different. And I think his validation and my mom kind of came at it from a different way because she always wanted to be a doctor and she couldn't because she also grew up dirt poor, but in a city in India. And, mm-hmm. you know, in India in those days, like, yeah, if you weren't the top 1% of your class, the only way you were going to get into med school was if you had money. So she was neither of those things. And she had a different kind of a chip and she very much like, you know, pushed that into me. So it was really important to both of them as the punchline. And I just had all of this guilt that I was given everything growing up. I have a younger sister. She became an attorney. So I guess she was a disappointment, technically, according to
exactly
our.
Exactly right.
He was That's the funny. Rebel.
Yeah. The black sheep of the family.
Exactly. The brown sheep in my case. But yeah.
So right. That's funny. Yeah.
But so, you know, I was just like, I feel like the only way that I could pay them back for giving me and my sister everything was to do this thing for them. And I was like, all right, maybe that's my version of sacrifice.
Yeah, maybe you'll find yourself, you'll feel better about it. But
yeah.
Now, ironically, you went into orthopedics. The orthopedic doctors I know, now it's a stressful part of the profession. They work their ass off, the big surgeries. They make more money than any of the doctors. I have some doctors make $3, $4, $5, $10 million a year. They're very stressed. I don't know if they're enjoying their life.
Right.
But they buy expensive cars and they probably don't have time to drive them. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah. And, you know, I realized that at, you know, at some point, you know, my imposter syndrome was, as you can imagine, on another level, like when I started medical school, none of my behavior mapped to me being in that moment at that time. Like I always grew up a very creative kid. I excelled, you know, more in, you know, like music and English, like I was a good writer. I was a musician. I was a drummer growing up. And then I was a DJ in college. You know, again, those two D's fell under disappointment. I wish.
Yeah. You're not going to pursue that as a career, you know?
Yeah. 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 And, but, you know, after college, I was just, you know, I really thought I wanted to be like a recording artist. Like, you know, I was really into hip hop. I really thought I could make it. And, you know, but again, it just came back to feeling this sense of obligation, you know, to my family. And then, you know, I did this program where I, right out of high school, there are these programs that combine your undergrad education with medical school, and you apply right out of high school, you know, pretty competitive to get into. And I got into one of these programs at the University of Rochester. You didn't have to take the MCAT, and you were automatically, as long as you maintained a certain GPA, you basically had a free ticket into medical school. So I got into one of these programs. And so it really, you know, I felt like, you know, you're throwing away a winning lottery ticket if you don't take this. So in some ways, I guess I just didn't have the courage to take the risk at the time. Plus, you know, coupled with this kind of family obligation. So I remember my first year of medical school, my advisory dean telling us, like, it's okay, you know, it's normal for you to feel like you don't belong here, you know, in your first year, even your second year a little bit. But at the end of your third year, if you're still feeling this way, then there's something wrong.
Okay. And that's good advice.
Yeah, I guess so. Right. But there I was at the end of my third year, like, still feeling like, what the F am I doing here? Like, this was such a big mistake. You know, and like, I was kind of panicking. I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Because it's not like, what do you do if you come? I mean, law school, you could do a lot of things, right? Business school, you come out of medical school, you're kind of a medical doctor. I mean, I know some people that made a transition into other things, but it's hard.
Yeah. And, you know, they don't really tell you about any of that stuff. Like, you know, and, you know, I didn't know. And for my family, Mitch, like, it wasn't even enough just to be a doctor. You had to be like
a specialist
or a respected, right, you know, doctor.
A leading oncologist in the country, and then you'd be respected.
Yeah, exactly. So it just, you know, became, after a while, I just started sensing a pattern like, oh, you know, this is never going to be enough.
Right.
You know?
It's just going, like, to keep going.
Yeah. And either, you know,
and you're not happy at that point, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So is that any way to live your life? You know, where basically you're unhappy and you resent your parents for the rest of your life. You know, like, if you have that tough conversation up front, at least, you know, like, it's uncomfortable for the moment, but then at least, you know, you're going to be able to live a much happier life. And then if you actually succeed in the thing that you wind up doing, then they're going to come
around.
Well,
then, yeah, obviously. Right. But if you don't, you take it. But look, it takes a lot of courage.
Yeah.
Right. Because you, and we all have friends that have done this and they're miserable at being an attorney, being a doctor, whatever, because they didn't have the courage to go and stand up for what they, you know, maybe their parents wouldn't have been crying and upset, but they still in their heart didn't have the courage to change the path. Or maybe they were nervous, right? Because you could go down this next path and not be successful. And then, you know, there's something to point at. Even with, at least in medicine, if you're semi-successful, you're like, well, I did what you told me to do. Then you change it and it's like, well, Suresh, why'd you change it? Like, this didn't work out, you know?
Yeah.
So it takes a lot of courage. I got to hand it to you, because I didn't. I can be completely honest with you on the microphone. I didn't. I did what I was told. I did as well as I could in school. I got into a good university, although it was like lighting me on fire for 4 years, because I was not that, I'd never worked at those kind of levels. My high school wasn't that hard. I don't know how I got in. I probably wouldn't have gotten in today. And then didn't have the choice of law schools that I wanted to, but got into a school that gave me money, whatever. Here I am practicing law. I mean, I would totally do it differently, but I never had the courage to say, I want to do this instead.
Yeah. I mean, it took me a long time. It took me a really long time. And what was crazy is I thought I wanted to go into this specialty called physical medicine and rehabilitation. And we used to joke back in the day, I'm sure they still do, that PM&R stood for plenty of money and relaxation. It was like basically in the process of elimination, being like, I don't really like anything. You know, this seemed like an easy
life. Let's do something that I can make money, not be too stressed, right?
Exactly. 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 But, you know, I explained that to my parents that I wanted to go into this field, and they were like, what is that? We've never heard of that. I'm like, neither of you are doctors. It doesn't matter. Like, if you haven't heard of it.
Right.
And, And they pretty much, like, you know, all of their friends now that are doctors, these Indian doctors, they basically, you know, put them up to talking to me, you know, out of this decision to go into this.
Yeah,
field.
They poo-pooed what you wanted to specialize in.
Yeah. And they were
like, that's not real medicine.
Yeah. And
yeah, that's not,
you know,
good.
All these doctors were just like, you know, you're not going to be, you know, as respected. Yeah. You'll make okay money, but you know, you're just not going to, you know, kid like you. And I'm just like, what does that mean? Like, what is happening here? This is like,
you know, like being a DO. I mean, the practice emerged now where DOs are more getting the respect of MDs, but in the back in those days, DO, it's like you went to chiropractic school. You're not even a doctor. So yeah, it's the same type of thing, right?
100%. And you know, my wife is a DO, and she still kind of feels that stigma, you know, now and again, and things are changing, and you know, people's perceptions are changing, but it's still, yeah, it's brand, right? At the end of the day,
well, like, it totally is. If letters. You know, like, I like DOs better than MDs. They seem to be more holistic, and right, and they have a more holistic approach to treatment of medicine, and it's not so, you know, treating what is wrong with you. So I'm glad that the professions are kind of merging, but yeah, it's hard. I have a lot of friends that were DOs, and they were like, you know, the black sheep of the medical community. Yeah. And I thought they were doing better things than the MDs were. Although all my clients are MDs are going to hear this thing and be like, what the hell are you talking about? You
know? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But you know, what was so crazy.
How old were you? Because the orthopedic stuff and all that specialty that takes you into your 30s, right?
Yeah.
So,
So
you look pretty young now, so you must have made this change that recently. Okay. Well.
No, I'm actually 65, Mitch. But
you look great. No.
Brown don't crack.
It keeps your skin nice. That's good.
I'm 35.
That's if you went through all your specialties, right? Through orthopedics, and you became a whatever those letters are that all my clients have. I think they finished like their residency, their internship, their specialty in their mid 30s.
Yeah.
So this must not be too recently that you walked away from.
Yeah. And, you know, I still do practice part time, but I'm slowly making that transition out. But, you know, ultimately, like, you know, how I decided on, you know, orthopedics, it was so crazy. Back to that PM&R thing. Like I was just like, all right, you know, screw everyone. Like, you know, I'm going to do this. Like this, you know, seems right to me. And then I did this rotation, this 4-week rotation in PM&R. It was all right. And then, you know, the last week I was really looking forward to working with this, you know, one guy who, you know, I guess coincidentally
in the hospital, like you're doing rounds and stuff.
Yeah. And there's this, you know, kind of subspecialty of PM&R called, you know, interventional spine and pain management. They do, you know, like, you know, injections and, you know, pain management stuff, a lot of procedures.
I've had slip bulging discs and got the shots and stuff.
So you're familiar. Yeah. And so at the time, you know, this one doctor there, another Indian guy, you kind of young, probably, you know, the same age as I am now. And he was probably the highest paid doctor in that entire hospital system. So I was always like intrigued. I was like, this is crazy. This guy at PM&R, like, you know, he's doing it, you know, must have an awesome life. And I'm, you know, rounding with him. And, you know, we had this little bit of break in between procedures, and he sits me down, and it was so crazy. Cause when I first met him, he was like, do we know each other? And he kind of looks like me too. Like, you know, he was a little bit taller, and I was just like, he was like, yeah.
Just because you're both Indian, you're like, do
maybe.
You know?
probably.
People
do.
Meet you and they're like, oh, Suresh, do you know this guy? You're like,
exactly.
I know all the Indian people.
Yeah,
people do
there's
that
like
too.
Over a billion of us.
Right.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, you're Jewish. Do you know this guy? Or you went to Cornell. Do you know? I'm like, no, I don't know these people. What does that have to do with anything?
Yeah. But so I was like, I don't know. Yeah, maybe we met in the mirror. I don't know. We kind of looked similar. But I don't know why he felt the need to say this to me. Maybe he saw a little bit of himself in me or something. And he was basically just like, you know, I love my life. You know, I, you know, have a great family. I get plenty of time to, you know, do stuff that I like to do outside of medicine. I make, you know, plenty of money, and I'm just sitting there like, yeah. And then he was like, but, and I was like, I was like, no, but. No,
wait, this is all good.
Yeah. And he was like, but he was like, if respect is important to you, don't go into this.
Here's a word from our sponsors. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000, that's L-A-W to 21000, to learn how to get your own digital business card. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their affiliate link on our website to learn more and get connected with Fetch. Printify is the online service that simplifies and automates the process of sourcing and creating print-on-demand products branded with your company logo, product, or service. Printify is a better alternative to pre-purchasing and warehousing your merchandise for distribution or sale. Follow their link from our website to learn how to set up your own online store. And be sure to visit our online store and get yourself some podcast merch. Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
And I was like, oh, man, why did you have to say that to me?
Respect was not important to me, but it's important to everyone else. I don't want to hear that.
I know. Why is this? I was like, did my parents send
it? Somehow your parents are going to hear this, right? Yeah, somehow.
Yeah. But that kind of really just, you know, at that time, it was very important to me what other people thought of me, the whole respect thing. And, you know, to some degree, I think we all, you know, care about those things. But, you know, at the moment,
it wears thin after years. Yeah, you know, yeah, finally you get to the point where you're just like, you know what? I don't care what other people think. I exactly. want to do what I want to do, you know.
And, you know, I'm much more there now than I was then. And I, you know, I wish I could talk to that version of myself. But anyway, like I completely switched courses and I was a very mediocre kind of an applicant for orthopedics. Like, you know, orthopedics is still very
a resume. You didn't have a strong application.
Yeah, you know, I had very average grades, board scores, all that stuff.
Well, you weren't pursuing that all the way through, right? So you weren't like, got to do this, got to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, the only.
Isn't there like a matching program, right? Like, so you want to go. You put down your five programs, they put down, there's no match. You got a problem, right?
Exactly. And, you know, so at that moment in time, I was at risk of not matching. So I knew that. And I was just like, okay, you know, the only way that I have a shot at this is I take a year out, I do research, I get another degree. So basically I did all these things. I got my, you know, master's of public health. I took this year off, did research in a lab. And that year was actually probably one of the most important years, like as far as, you know, eventually me, you know, changing courses.
Like reflecting on things and stuff, got to take a step back type of thing.
Yeah, because, you know, so, you know, I was doing all this stuff, but I was really afraid of going back into my clinical rotations in my fourth year after taking this time off away from clinical medicine. And, you know, I was trying to do orthopedics. So I was like, I need to somehow like study this stuff during this year. But I was like, realistically, I'm not going to like be looking at textbooks and like, you know, learning this stuff. Like, it just seems awful. And I just don't have the time. But what I was really into, and one of the reasons I, you know, even thought orthopedics might be my escape ultimately from medicine itself, is like the things that I was intrinsically motivated by at that moment in time were hip hop, stand-up comedy, and sports. And but the only one of those things that had a subspecialty of medicine was sports, you know, sports medicine.
Give me sports medicine, right?
Yeah. I was like, you know, maybe I could be like the Sanjay Gupta of ESPN. And I was like, you know, that's how I, that was like this thing that I was chasing.
You could be commentating on their injuries and their rehab coming back. And
Right. So I started a blog basically that year. Every injury that I saw on ESPN, I just started blogging about it. And these were like the very early days of like, you know, Twitter. And this was maybe like 2009, 2010. And I didn't think anything of it. This was just for me to keep in touch with, you know, orthopedics clinically. And so I could learn the stuff so that when I went back, you know, I wouldn't be, you know,
just went to like blogger.com and set up a blog and then started posting stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And I called it Injury Duty. You'll like this because so I was trying to think of a name for the blog. I was like, what am I going to call this thing? And I kept getting these you know, notices for jury duty. And because I have like such a dad joke sense of humor, a lot of times I was like, jury duty.
Right. More how like young? How old am I? Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, jury duty, more like injury duty. And I was like, oh, injury duty. That's perfect. Like, that's what I'll do. Yeah. So I started this blog and all of these like you know, sports writers started following me, and like, you know, I started getting a little bit of buzz. People were reaching out to me unsolicited saying like, oh, that really helped my fantasy lineup. And I was like, this is really cool. And you know, but it became very difficult to maintain this blog, especially when I, you know, started back in my fourth year, started getting busy again. But that year that I took off, when I was doing research in the lab, I was listening to a lot of podcasts. I was listening to like a ton of like Joe Rogan and, you know, Tim Ferriss, guys like that. And I was like, I feel like I could do this. I feel like, you know, we're all talking all the time. These guys just seem like they're, you know, recording their conversations. You know, maybe I'll do it without all of the, you know, the mushrooms and stuff that that Joe Rogan.
That was the early days of Joe Rogan too.
Yeah. So I started a podcast with one of my best friends from medical school, who's now a child and adolescent psychiatrist. And you know, this was 10 years ago.
Early days of podcast.
Yeah. There was like almost nobody listening.
Like you,
to
Joe
it.
Rogan, and Tim Ferriss, and that was
exactly.
It.
Exactly. You know? Yep, that was us. Yep. I'd like to think. Right. Yeah. But
you're like the unknown Jersey boy. You know, didn't go to California.
Exactly.
So he was co-hosting it with you, your friend.
Yeah. Okay. And it kind of started off as like a sports, you know, medicine kind of podcast, but then very quickly, it just really combined all of these other interests, you know, like, and we were, you know, doing a lot of storytelling, you know, a lot of, you know, anecdotes from our experience in med school, some funny, some insightful. And, you know, we were getting like thousands of downloads in those days. And we were just like, is this normal? Like,
you know, name, Injury Duty.
It was called Laughs by Prescription. That was the name of that.
Oh, that's a good name too.
Yeah. That was the name of that original podcast. And then, you know, we did it for like, you know, maybe 2 years, and then we both kind of went our separate ways for residency, and, you know, the dream kind of died. Then we were just like, all right, that was a good run. And, you know, he was in Alabama, I was in New York, and, you know, we were like, that was fun, but, you know, I guess, you know, back to reality.
Oh, so it wasn't like we had Zoom in those days and the infrastructure. So you couldn't just jump on from where you were and just do a podcast. Now you can. It's easy. Yeah,
exactly. It was amazing in those days. Yeah. You had to figure out how to set up your RSS feed, and you had to, you know, have the same setup in the same room and stuff. So I'm in the thick of residency, and, you know, so is my friend. And, you know, I'm just like, I made a huge mistake. Like, I think I'm going to quit. Like, I just, you know, this was completely, you know, the wrong thing. And ironically enough, like, sports medicine was like my least favorite subspecialty of orthopedics. And I was just like, this is just a huge mistake.
Oh.
And then we get a message to our Facebook page. We had a Facebook page for our podcast, and it was a medical student from Poland who basically was just like, you know, there's a ton of us here that have listened to all of your episodes. I know you guys are probably super busy, but you guys got to keep doing it.
Did you even know? I guess there weren't a lot of analytics in those days, right?
No, we had no analytics.
Poland was downloading the podcast.
Yeah. And we just thought that all the numbers that we were seeing were just like spam bots or something. I was like, there's no way anybody's listening to this.
Right.
And I think of that moment, I call it like dream CPR. It was just like, it just, you know, completely reinvigorated us. And I was just like, and it was the first time I really felt the power of podcasting and social media and the internet, really. Like, the fact that somebody an ocean away could be moved enough by stuff that we were just, you know, having a conversation about to reach out to us, to tell us to keep going. And if that didn't happen, I don't know, like, you know, where my, you know, life might have gone. But basically, I was exactly like you said, there was no Zoom, there was no Skype. I was looking for like a remote podcasting solution. And I was listening to a ton of podcasts.
You mean because he was in Alabama and you were in New York and you wanted to do this together?
Yeah. And I wanted to figure out a way that we could do this. And I was looking for like some app, you know, something that would allow us to do it. And I stumbled across this app called Anchor. This was like late 2015.
Early days of Anchor. Okay.
This was early days of Anchor. Yeah. Late 2015. I think I jumped on 3 months after they launched.
Yeah.
And when I hopped on, I was thinking like, oh, okay, this is like, you know, podcasting platform, but it was not. It was like very much, it was like a voice Twitter. You were almost like communicating in voicemails. You had 2 minutes to like, you know, tell a story, sing a song, tell a joke, whatever. And then people.
Oh, it wasn't what it is now.
No, it was like almost like a club, like an early version of Clubhouse, but it wasn't like a group of people. It was
sounds
just like kind of
audio TikTok.
Yeah, it really was. And you're almost communicating in voicemails. And I didn't really know how many people were on the platform at the time. I was like, you know, I'll give this a try. I don't know that this isn't exactly what I was looking for, but I definitely don't have a lot of time. Maybe 2 minutes is as much as I can really spare right now. So I was literally recording this stuff like in between clinic, in between cases in the operating room. But I was trying to do like some real storytelling on there. Like a lot of people were, you know, like most of social media, you know, they were describing their lunch or like, you know, just meaningless stuff. I was just like, there's a lot of garbage on
here. No, but you said that was always in your blood, like entertaining and creating. And So that obviously excited you and interested you.
Exactly. So I broke through the noise pretty quickly and the anchor started putting, you know, my stuff on their like editor's picks and, you know, they were like tweeting them out. And like, I was just like, this is cool, but I didn't really think anything of it. And now like I'm in my last year of residency and I'm really trying to figure out what to do. And, you know, pretty much everybody in orthopedics does a fellowship.
Right. That's what I was thinking of before, fellowship. Yeah.
And I was just like, I'm done. I was done yesterday. Like, I'm so burnt out. I just want to be done. Like, technically, you know, you don't need a fellowship to start practicing. Like, you know, unless you really wanted to specialize in a certain field, just do joint replacements all day, whatever. Like most of orthopedics is still you're taking general call and whatever. I didn't even know that I was going to, you know, practice at all. Like I was looking at like non-clinical fellowships. I was trying to do maybe like a medical journalism fellowship. I was looking into, you know, different things like that. And then like January of that last year of my residency, the team at Anchor reached out to me and, you know, basically,
attention.
Yeah. And it was very serendipitous because they were a New York based tech company. You know, they're the, you know, most of these like, you know, big tech companies were in California, right? In Silicon Valley. And so they reached out and they were like, you know, we love your content. We just raised, you know, our Series A. We're trying to take this thing to the next level. And if you're interested, like, you know, we would love for you to come work, you know, for us, like, you know, make content, you know, we'll, you know, kind of develop a show around the stuff that you're doing. And, you know, at that time, they still weren't really pivoting into podcasting. They were trying to, you know, Snapchat was huge. They were trying to make like, you know, this digital audio, like kind of like audio Snapchat kind of a thing where it was still short form audio. And then they partnered with, you know, Spotify and Apple where you could kind of, you know, like DJ songs in between. So it really was like kind of like this, your own like radio show kind of a thing. And that was perfect for me, you know, as a DJ and like, you know, all these other interests that I had. So I started this show called Medicine Remixed, you know, for them. And it was like the opportunity of a lifetime. And we were one of their flagship podcasts that, you know, and we're getting,
so you could still use your medical background. You didn't waste 15 years of your life.
Yeah.
And you could do this. So what were the episodes about? What were you talking about?
All sorts of stuff. I mean, a lot, it was very much like this pop medicine type of a show. It was like this very mixtape style of podcasting. And both me and my co-host have a background in like, you know, hip hop production. So it really did sound like a mixtape. There was a lot of like sounds and, you know, like, you know, instrumentals, like, you know, playing, but, you know, we talk about anything medically related in like pop culture or like, you know, sports entertainment. And we'd even have this like little segment where we were dissecting like medical references and hip hop lyrics. We were doing, you know, a ton of interviews. We were, you know, doing like this fun, like, you know, almost like, you know, WebMD meets Urban Dictionary kind of a thing, like defining, you know, medical words. It was really geared towards like a lay, you know, audience, but, it was great. Like it was a hell of a ride and, you know, we were, you know, basically making money from doing the thing that we loved. And
so they were paying you to do the show?
Yeah. Yeah. Which was like mind boggling to me.
That I was just
like,
podcast.
Exactly. I was just like, this is wild. I don't know that an opportunity like this is going to happen. So we committed to doing 10 original minutes a day. And so it really was like kind of, it started off as a short form, you know, radio show, but then very quickly it became clear to them that people just want a podcasting platform. So, and you know, this is what we were telling them too. I was just like, you know, it would be great if we could do this like longer form. I think short form plays, but long form also does. So then they just, you know, really pivoted into podcasting. And like, it was incredible to be a part of that. And then, you know, Spotify acquired them. And then, you know, afterwards, like, you know, we were still making money from ads a little bit. But I was just like, how am I going to like turn this into like a real business? So I thought, you know, because I know all this stuff about podcasting, maybe let me try to start an agency and do this type of work for, you know, like, you know, medical education companies or hospitals, like people in this space and you know, maybe try to be like a, you know, like a VaynerMedia or like, you know, one of these,
yeah,
like
to produce agencies. Content for these companies, magazines, hospitals, whatever.
Exactly. Okay. So my first and only client, is this company that I'm working at now, called OrthoBullets, which, you know, I used as a resident, like, you know, and this is, you know, where we do our, it's like LinkedIn meets Kaplan almost. It's like kind of a social network, but it's also the place where you, you know, prepare for your boards, like you're doing questions.
Oh,
like,
it was 'cause I didn't understand that. Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, they have all of this, you know, all this media on there, like, you know, videos and, you know, these topics.
So
and,
things
and,
that explain, it's like, I don't know if we still use it, but we used to use this company called Barbary and you would go and you'd take a course. Yeah. For law, for the LSATs, for the bar, was it for the LSATs? No, I think it was for the bar exam. Yeah. And you would go and you'd take a course. Those days it was in person. They probably have a lot of stuff online now, but you know, they had books that would summarize like whatever the topic was.
Yeah.
And yeah. So that's basically what it was doing.
Yeah, pretty much. And you know, the thing that I always wanted out of them, because I'm a very, you know, I realized in residency, like, you know, how much I was getting out of podcasts and audiobooks. I was just like, I wish there was something that I could, it just feels like you're like uploading that information. There's just so much, there's so little time for you to study. And on top of your 100-hour weeks, they're expecting you to study, you know, for your exams and stuff. I was like, it would be great if I could just listen to something on my commute. And so they didn't have anything like that. So I reached out to their founder and, you know, I pitched them on this idea. And he was just like, you know, a lot of people have been asking about that. I don't know where to start. And I was just like, you know, let me kind of do like a pilot podcast for you. And, you know, we'll see how this goes.
So what were they doing at that point? Just printed materials and stuff?
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, they had their website, they had an app, you know, they had videos and stuff, but really they had no audio product. So, basically I just adapted their content into like an audio format. It was doing like, you know, multiple choice questions, you know, at the end of it. And took them from 0 to 5 million downloads in like a little over a year. And
so you could download to, in those days, probably was mostly an iPod. And
download
to a player.
This was in actually 2018. So not too long ago.
So it was already phones
like,
that were, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, you were streaming, it was distributing. I was using Anchor because, you know, I was very familiar with that platform and, you know, how to you know, build an audience on there and stuff. And then I started consulting a little bit on their social media presence and I was able to like 20x their following. And I was like, I think I'm pretty good at this.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
And yeah, so, you know, their founder was just like, you know, can we talk about maybe doing some sort of like an acquisition deal? Like, can I buy your company? I was like, well, as cool as it would seem,
I don't have a company.
I don't really have a company. I'm just me. Yeah. I'm just like, as cool as it would sound to say, I sold my first company. You're my first and only client. So, you know, like, just buy me, like, you know, make me an offer and, you know, that, you know, the rest is kind of history. You made me a pretty compelling offer to come on. And I was just like, you know what, this might be my version of business school to really know, to really cultivate that self-awareness, to know that, am I really an entrepreneur or am I better off as like a number two or a three at a company or, you know, what, you know, because
it's certainly a stepping stone, if anything, right?
Yeah. 100%. So, you know, I'm still practicing, you know, like 25% right now. Like I take like a week of
clinical.
Patients? Yeah. I take call and like I do mostly like level 3 trauma call, which is basically
you're doing
just
ER
like,
stuff and on call stuff. You don't have like you're not going to a practice where you're seeing patients and you have to keep track of those patients.
Right. So it's just, you know, there's this huge other, you know, side of medicine where, you know, because there's all these hospitals that need coverage, especially like in rural parts of the country. So, yeah. So I take call. It's pretty flexible. I could kind of take it whenever I want. And then I spend the rest of my time.
Are you still in New York? Are you?
I'm in Connecticut now. I'm in Connecticut. Yeah. Cause my wife works at Yale and I'm kind of this wild card that, you know, is doing this stuff in media and then, you know, slowly trying to phase out of.
But it sounds like a good, I know the story's not over, but So we'll circle back when we're both in our 70s or something, but it sounds like you went down this medical path and maybe reluctantly, but you are using some of your training and your knowledge, certainly of the medical bit. I mean, you know, you're not wasting all of that.
Yeah.
You're kind of finding a way to use it and be happy about it as opposed to.
Yeah. So I think, you know, very on brand to the accidental entrepreneur. Definitely the accidental part. I can definitely relate a lot.
Well, part of it's accidental, but part of it's more intentional than you think, right? Because that's you were kind of looking for this thing. You're like, I like this, whatever. I mean, I'm kind of in the same boat. Like I went down a road in law. There's a lot of law I don't like to do. I like to do, you know, work for business owners and get them set up and contracts and their transactional work and growing them and helping them with their business plans. But I'm an entrepreneur at heart. And the podcast is it's a release. It's an outlet. I'm sure yours is too, right? To get on the mic and to talk about things, to produce the content. I like the creative side of it. And it sounds like you do too.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. So I know, cause I saw the thing pop up from Sophie that we're running out of time, but tell me what the future looks like. Like, what are you working on now? Where do you see this stuff going? I mean, let's put the clinical stuff aside because that's like your odd job to support your family, but you know what I mean? So what's going on with Ortho Bullets in your future, you think?
Yeah, so it's a really interesting company. I mean, they've expanded now to like medical students, some medical education, and, you know, kind of the long-term vision is to really go into every subspecialty, you know, of medicine to kind of, be this like hybrid, you know, LinkedIn, Kaplan product. But then I think the long-term vision is to kind of create this affiliate business that almost like a match.com for, you know, patients and doctors, because, you know, they do really well SEO and SEM wise, like, because you know, they're like, if they're not number one, they're like in the top three for any, you know, fracture that you Google. So like, you know, patients are Googling this stuff in the ER. Like if you Google like femoral neck fracture, Ortho Bullets comes up. So trying to like leverage that to you know, essentially connect patients to the right doctor. And we have, you know, just, you know, a ton of, you know, orthopedic surgeons and physicians that use the site. So that's kind of like the long-term, you know, vision of it. And for me right now, you know, really my day-to-day is really helping them with, you know, marketing and, you know, expanding their podcasting network. We just launched, you know, their medical student, you know, podcast. And so we're really building like a podcast network, which is something that I always, you know, wanted to do. We just didn't have, you know, the resources. So I'm really, you know, learning how to do that. And
right.
I think
you're not the guy
really
going on the mic for all the podcasts. You're building some, and promoting them.
Right. For some of them I am. And, you know, others, just kind of, you know, assembling the systems behind it. But yeah, I mean, you know, I think that was always something that I wanted to do in the future. So I still, you know, aspire to be this, you know, entrepreneur. Right now, I'm more of like an intrapreneur, I guess is the term.
Maybe at some point you spin out and you'll be a podcast platform for the medical community. I don't know.
Exactly. So yeah, we'll definitely have to keep in touch and
absolutely.
I'll keep you posted on where things are going, but this was awesome. Thanks so much.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Cherie. So
if you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.